TCJ Radio International presents Switzerland in Sound, produced and presented by Bob Zanotti.
First of all, Paul, why Switzerland? Why base your books on this particular country?
I think basically I fell in love with Switzerland way back in the late 60s, early 70s, when I was on my travels of the days of youth hosteling, and just incredibly beautiful country. I just felt inspired when I was here, met many interesting students and other people, and I just fell in love with the scenery, the lakes and the mountains.
You went on to use Switzerland as a location for your writing. Switzerland, and yet you've travelled in many other countries throughout the world. You're still centred on Switzerland.
I felt very emotionally drawn to Switzerland for a variety of reasons, and I think there was just an unpredictability, a kind of mystical quality that I couldn't quite come to grips with, but it helped me to feel kind of inspirational. And there was many connections, I think, with my past as well, because my grandmother was Swiss, and I think there was a lot of interesting things I needed to sort of discover for my own personal self, and this helped as well in bringing me back to Switzerland time and again.
The Love on the Verge trilogy is a series of mystery thrillers, espionage thrillers. Do you think that Switzerland lends itself to that kind of genre?
I think it does in some respects. If we go back, obviously, to one of the most familiar ones, such as James Bond, and I think more recently there's been a resurgence of the espionage thriller, and I suppose in many respects this is something that we've been familiar with for some time, but it's come very much back into vogue. And I think the world of spy counter spy again is a very interesting genre.
The first Love on the Verge book was to a great extent based around Lucerne. Why Lucerne, and what about other parts of the country?
Well, Lucerne after Basel was the first really sort of magical place that I visited, and I just felt there was such a resonance there, and it's such a beautiful location. I just basically fell in love with the Lucerne, and it's stayed with me for the rest of my years up until obviously now into my 50s, and I just thought it's a place I really want to write about. You know, I just found so much inspiration there.
Can we go back to the trilogy itself? When did the idea form in your head? When did you get the idea for Love on the Verge?
I think there was also a love story involved, but I think essentially I've always been interested in spy thrillers, and I think it was a combination of being in such a beautiful location with somewhere so different and almost mystical. And of course I was also influenced originally by The Third Man, and I just managed to put these things together, funnily enough, and with my past experiences again of the backpacking days, I had this quite amazing story, and I wanted to obviously continue writing another sequel, and from that obviously we've gone into writing a third sequel.
Can I just ask you, perhaps the impossible, can you sum up the story behind the sequel, the plot lines?
That's a bit more difficult, Richard, but in the second sequel, for instance, we've started to introduce the infamous Amber Room, and we've started to get a bit more interested in what goes on at Whitehall, for instance, and there's been other sort of areas that have been extremely interesting to me, and I suppose I wanted to convey that amidst all the wonderful locations in Switzerland. And again, as we go further into the third sequel, we're including other famous Swiss cities, and we're enhancing the story, which is now taking on a totally different route of all of its own.
It's a strange thing, isn't it, Paul, that dozens, hundreds of books have been written about Switzerland, which are non-fiction, about Switzerland as a place to visit and a place to live, etc. But relatively few books have been written in English which are fictional, with one big exception, and of course that is the great writer John le Carré. How do you feel about, in a way, following in his footsteps?
Well, I suppose we wanted to write coming from a different angle, so to speak, and this is why I think we've got a dazzling breakthrough in the suspense and intrigue field, but in a way that where we've got characters that are very sort of normal, down to earth, people that are kind of much more everyday, which we have with the characterization of Michael, Wilhelmina and Madeline. I hope that we've conveyed very believable characters, and if this is the case, and I think we've done this with the trilogy, and you know as well as I, Richard, the importance of characterization, and we want character-led stories. Let's hope we've succeeded with that.
What about your other writing activities? They aren't just confined to the trilogy, are they?
No, we've written a book published in America called Hiatus, which is another thriller, totally different story. But we've also been recently commissioned to write another book, which is a thriller, which is written very much from the female perspective, which has been commissioned and written about the Switzerland's only island, Brissago. Again, it's wonderful Switzerland.
You say Switzerland's only island, well, only island of any size. We should say that, of course, it's in the middle of a lake.
That is the interesting thing, actually. It features in the middle of Lake Maggiore, and we've already had a considerable interest in the story, and I just think it's such a beautiful place, and of course it lends itself to the botanical gardens which have been erected there by the Baroness.
The two of us are sitting here talking in Bern. Now, Bern, of course, you were telling me earlier, is very special to you, and you've got all sorts of plans. What are they?
Well, a new book venture is being commissioned, and with the support of Swiss Tourism, Bern Tourismus, and now apparently support from the British Embassy, it looks very likely, in fact, that we'll have a new book based solely on Bern. We have a working title for the book, which is going to be called The Prose of Bern, and it will be a fictional story based somewhere around the late 60s, early 70s, and we already have an outline for the story and lots of very good themes, but there's much work to do on that as yet, Richard.
You seem to be making a lot of working visits to Switzerland. I suppose one day it's your hope that you'll be able to see the country at your leisure, perhaps even settle here for a while. Is that what you've got in mind?
Seems to be the case, actually, Richard. With the way things are going at present, it seems almost a foregone conclusion that eventually, yes, we will be coming to live in Switzerland.
Paul da Silva, thank you very much, and good luck with the third of the trilogy, Love on the Verge.
Thank you very much, Richard. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Hi, this is Bob Zanotti. Do you miss Swiss Radio International? If so, I invite you to visit my website, SwitzerlandInSound.com. Colorful and informative radio features about Switzerland, its destinations, interesting people, politics, culture, and even the two Bobs. SwitzerlandInSound.com, where English language radio from Switzerland lives on.
And welcome to a dear old friend, and when I say old, I do not mean an age, but in terms of our chronology together, a very good friend and former colleague at the Swiss International Radio, Richard Dawson. For many, many years at the radio, you were specialized in the Swiss cultural scene, the Swiss artistic scene, and you know, that to many people might seem to be a contradiction in terms. People think of high technology, they think of watches, science, the pharmaceutical industry and banking, but yet this country has a wealth of creativity behind it and certainly no lack of great places to see it.
It's very privileged in a way because this is a small country. It's got, I believe, more art museums per capita than most other countries. It's particularly rich in modern art, but the whole spectrum of art is represented in Switzerland's museums. You can't miss them. They're everywhere. Even in the most remote places.
You have just covered for Switzerland in Sound something we're about to hear, and it's an interview you did. Obviously, this is the top news in the Swiss cultural field, and that is the opening of the Paul Klee Center and Museum. Actually, it's not just one single building. It's a collection of buildings, isn't it?
Basically, it's three buildings, but to look at it, you wouldn't even think that. It's very, very difficult to describe, but it's a building, if we can call it that, or a complex, which seems to blend with the environment. It's perfectly, in my view and the view of many others, designed by the architect Renzo Piano, the Italian who's quite well known throughout the world, actually. One of his other great projects in Switzerland was the Bayer Foundation just outside Basel, completely different from what he's done with the Paul Klee Center in Bern. And of course, listeners to this can just look at the website and see for themselves what the building looks like
from a distance. And that's the way so many people see it, from the highway that goes right past through Bern. It's built right on the highway or the autobahn. It looks at a distance like a collection of hangars, sort of hangar design, really, very more functional than artistic.
That's the best description I've ever heard of it, actually. You wouldn't think it was an art museum, for example. You might well think that, is that where the cunning Swiss are concealing some of their air force? But no, inside you have the biggest single collection of works by one of the most influential artists of the 20th century, Paul Klee.
And Paul Klee is very much at home in Bern. Ironically, as we'll learn in just a few moments during your interview, he was technically not Swiss, although he's certainly embraced as a favorite son of Bern because he spent so much time here. He was, for all intents and purposes, Swiss, except for his passport.
Ask any Swiss, and they'll say that Paul Klee was Swiss. Well, ask most Swiss that. They will identify with him as he would have identified with Switzerland. Yeah. He spent most of his life here. He was born just outside Bern. One of the great ironies, he was born German. He did military service for Germany during World War I. But on paper, he was not a Swiss. His application for Swiss nationality did come through, but after he died, mm-hmm. Not long after he died.
So we could say, technically, hair-splittingly, he was a posthumous Swiss.
Definitely.
And there is one almost sad footnote to this, and I'll ask you, as an expert in this field who knows the museum so well, up until now, anyone who wanted to enjoy Klee went to the Bernese Fine Arts Museum, the Kunstmuseum, actually, in Bern, and now they would seem to have lost their centerpiece to the Klee Museum.
Big challenge for them. It was, as you say, the centerpiece. It was the big attraction, the Klee collection at the Fine Arts Museum in Bern. Maybe it's good for them. Maybe it'll be good for them in the long run because they've got to just do that little bit extra to attract visitors. Of course, you must also remember that there will be many visitors to Bern who will come to see the Klee Center, and then, while they're here, might go to see what's on in the Fine Arts Museum. So let's just hope that everybody benefits from the Klee Center. For sure, the city of Bern will benefit from it, and for sure, the people of Bern will benefit from it.
Now the time comes to focus on the new Klee Center and Museum. I don't know, have they really fixed on a title? They call it both. It goes by both names, Center and Museum. Which is more popular?
Well, whatever's more popular, they call it a center because it's much more than a museum. It is a research center as well. There's part of it which is for, say, postgraduate students or anybody wanting to do further research on the works of Klee. There's a whole section devoted to education for children, and education shouldn't put them off, because children get an awful lot of pleasure out of just looking at the works of play. And then there's one other interesting section to the Paul Clay Centre, and that's the auditorium. They have a program of concerts there. Clay himself was a musician, and I know that even the auditorium in its own right would get some sort of recognition. That's ignoring the fact that the rest of the building is devoted to this hugely influential artist.
Those key words, a multi-talent, Paul Clay, a multi-talent, and you found out more about that from the point of view of one of the officials of the centre. Who are we talking to?
We're talking to the deputy director, who's been associated with the project from the very beginning, Ursina Barandun.
Paul Clay was an artist. He was a musician. He liked music very much, and he played the violin himself during his life. He was a poet. He was a gifted teacher, and he liked very much the theatre.
That leads us to the Paul Clay Centre itself. Just as Clay wasn't a mere artist, although a very important one, this is not a mere museum. It's more than that. What else is it?
We are, in a certain way, you can say, a cultural centre. We are a platform for music, theatre, art, temporary exhibitions, and for a children's museum. And the reason for that is that we are a biographic institution, and we want to present to the public all the activities of Paul Clay and all the art he made.
It's a concept which would have pleased Clay himself.
I don't know, but I hope so, and I could imagine that he would have liked it.
It's always fascinating to see how much children appreciate his work. In fact, a lot of the focus will be on education here, on teaching children. Why do you think Clay has such a fascination for young people?
One of the reasons is that Paul Clay never painted 100% abstractly. So you always see with your own fantasy figures, flowers, houses, objects in his paintings. And I think that children with their fantasy can create a world for themselves. And on the other side, Paul Clay said that the creativity and the fantasy of children is much closer to the origin of everything than the creativity and the fantasy of adults. So he felt very close. He liked very much children and their way of treating things and acting.
It's interesting to reflect, isn't it, that even if Clay hadn't been an artist, a painter, or a sculptor, he could have been something else. He could have been a teacher. You've mentioned the music. He was a true all-rounder, wasn't he?
I think so. And when he was a young man, he did for a long time not know whether to get an education as a painter or as a musician. And then he decided to go to the academy and to play the violin for himself. So he did not want to neglect one of these arts for another one. And he was all of that, as you said, painter, poet, teacher, a theatre man at one time.
His worth has been recognised by so many people, in particular by Professor Maurice Müller, a Swiss orthopaedic surgeon here. In fact, it's thanks to his generosity that this whole centre exists at all. What's the story behind that?
Well, Professor Müller is a very, very worldwide famous orthopaedic surgeon, and he has got the title as a surgeon of the century, so he's very well known for his revolutionary methods of treating fractures, and he has invented the prosthesis for the hips. And Professor Müller himself, he's a gifted teacher, and he said that art is so important for education of human beings that he wanted to give something back to the place where he studied and where he lived and lives again, to Bern and the citizens of Bern. And so he said, I will give a lot of my money that you can create this cultural center for the people and especially for the young persons in Bern who are our future.
This, of course, was with the full support of the Klee family.
In fact, the Klee family were the first who said at the beginning of the 1990s that they would agree to give their possession of Klee works to the public under condition that the canton and the city of Bern are willing to construct and to run a Paul Klee museum. So, in fact, the first initiative came from the Klee family, and then Professor Müller, when he heard that the city and the canton of Bern are willing to make a museum for Paul Klee, he said, I give you money, I give you some ideas, I give you the architect Renzo Piano, so that you can do something really great, something that's unusual for Bern, something that corresponds to the great spirit of Paul Klee.
In choosing Renzo Piano as architect, Müller set his sights very high, because Piano, of course, is one of Europe's leading architects.
What is very interesting and what nobody knows is the Müller family did not want to have Renzo Piano as the architect of the Zentrum Paul Klee because they saw the Baylor Foundation in Basel. The reason why he knew Renzo Piano is that 30 years ago, Professor Müller had operated Maurizio Pollini, the famous pianist, and Maurizio Pollini was a very close friend of Renzo Piano, and so they met.
Paul Klee himself, a lot of people are under the impression that he was Swiss because he's always associated with Switzerland and Bern in particular, but he never had Swiss nationality, did he?
No, he didn't. He died as a German with a German passport. But Paul Klee spent more than half of his life in Bern. He felt Bernese. He talked a perfect Bernese German. And many of his titles of his 10,000 works are, you can say, in a Bernese slang. So the Bernese language was very important for him. I don't think that Bern was, from the artistic point of view, very important for him. Munich was at that time a metropole for art, a center for art production. But he felt at ease here. He was born here. He spent the last 6 years of his life here. And of course, we are very proud.
You were just listening to Switzerland in Sound with Bob Zanotti. For more information, go to www.switzerlandinsound.com.